Good evening, everyone. This is Bruce Birch with All Things Reconsidered, coming to you live from Greensboro, North Carolina, in the heart of the Tar Heel State. I don't know that I'm altogether entirely too proud about that, but I do love my state. I do love my state. The music that you're hearing is some rather interesting music that you'll give me a moment. It's Stephen Housden, and you can go to his website by going to stephenhousden.com. It's Stephen P.H. Housden with a D.com. Great music there. Tonight's show. Let's talk about tonight's show. Tonight's show is underwritten by Godbold Computer Services from Tallahassee, Florida. Thank you so much, guys, for underwriting this show. If you have a business and you'd like to underwrite this show, then please do get in touch with me. Send me an email, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. We are being archived by White Rose Society. Over there, Ben Birch doing that deal. Thank you, Ben, for doing that. And also, you can pick up our archives at allthingsreconsidered.org. And let's see, what else is going on? I wanted to send out some shout-outs to the folks in the Tom Hartman chat room. If you're not in the Tom Hartman chat room and you're listening to the stream, please do go there, because that's where you're going to find the most erudite people in the entire world. Anyway. Okay, grateful to be here with you tonight. My name is Bruce Birch, and I am the host of All Things Reconsidered. And before we get going, though, the question was posed to me earlier this evening about the entire show length kind of thing. And the reason why I'm asking about this is because I was asked recently, just this evening, whether or not this show ought to run longer than an hour. And, and I could run longer than an hour. I'd be more than willing to run longer than an hour. But, I'd like to know from you. You tell me. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? You want me to run to, now going into 2 o'clock in the morning might be a tough bit of a deal. But, and I don't want to run into my friend Rama's time either. But if you would like to vote on that, send me an email, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. And you know what? We'll take a poll. And you know what? If you guys want to send me an email and let's see here. Send me an email and let me know what you think. Please do so. Okay. Tonight we're going to be taking calls. I had an interview that I was thinking about doing this evening, and be honest with you, I like the idea that we kind of take a break when we do an interview on shows. When we do an interview shows, that I like the idea of being able to take a break between those shows so that we have a bit of so we have some time to decompress, etc. Now, last week I was on the air for 3 hours on Friday and 3 hours on Sunday. So, of course we did interviews too, but with Mark Rudd, and great interview, fantastic interview. So this week we're just going to do the straight telephone call thing now. If you'd like to get in on the show, you're more than welcome to. And what I'd like to recommend that you do is you get in touch with me by dialing into the show by calling 336-856-2855, and pretty much open topic tonight. So whatever you'd like to talk about, feel free to dial in and let us have it, whatever it might be. Now, I'm not going to purport to be any kind of expert about anything that you want to call in about, but I'll try to help you keep the conversation going. Okay? That's 336-856-2855, 336-856-2855. That's the telephone number. Now, getting into the heart of the show, we're about 5 minutes after 10 right now on this Sunday evening, Eastern Standard Time, of course. The first story that really that I wanted to talk about, and I guess the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because it has in a roundabout way, but in a worldwide way to do with women's rights. And I think that on the eve of the Supreme Court nomination process for Judge Samuel Alito, that we all really need to be aware that the idea that women having rights in this country, such as the right to choose their own health care, or the right to, any number of things, is not sacrosanct, is not exempt from the bullying tactics of the right, Now, a lot of the people on the right, now there's plenty of, like look at Condoleezza Rice. So she's a woman in a very high, powerful position in Washington, D.C., and is a woman. And so people would venture to guess that perhaps the GOP, is not against women's rights. But underneath all that, what you see is that some of the actions that they've taken, such as the nomination of Supreme Court Justice John Roberts and the confirmation of him to Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, a gentleman who was fervently against any kind of choice with abortion, and now Samuel Alito, who at one time wrote, I think it was an opinion in favor of the strip searching of a 10-year-old girl. I mean, these people are crazy. Okay, and then you got also, you've got this guy. I'm trying to remember. Oh yes, 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 yes. From the great state of Pennsylvania, we have the guy who brought a fetus home to sleep, I couldn't believe this, this senator, and sometimes when I really dislike someone, I forget their name, and it's Santorum, so now they're I think today. The 8th. I think it's tomorrow that they're holding this Justice... No, it was today. That they're holding this Justice Sunday thing. The right is fervently trying to eradicate many, many women's rights. Not just in this country, but as it turns out, the fundamental religious types are doing this all over the world. I mean, look at what happened in Afghanistan with the Taliban. Now, the story that I'm about to bring to you is from the Associated Press, but it's from Kandahar, Afghanistan. When we invaded Afghanistan, basically what we did was we took down a very highly oppressive religious regime called the Taliban. Now, the Taliban, in the middle of that, we caught ADHD and decided instead to devote all of our resources to Iraq because, we figured, well, in Afghanistan, we gave them enough of a show of power that, we don't need to fight them anymore. But as it turns out, the Taliban is still there. The Taliban is still wreaking havoc. And here's a story that I wanted to share with you. Suspected Taliban gunmen burned down a primary school in Afghanistan's main southern city on Sunday, the latest in a spate of attacks against teachers and institutions that educate girls. No one was hurt in the pre-dawn attacks against the Kabul primary school in Kandahar, said Rafiki Othak, Kandahar province's education director. A group of men tied up two security guards and made bonfires of books and wooden desks that eventually razed the whole building. The school, which was on a two-month vacation, taught some 700 boys and girls. Dozens of schools have been burned since the U.S.-led forces ousted the Taliban in 2001 for sheltering Osama bin Laden. Most of the attacks have come at night and have caused no deaths. On Tuesday, however, suspected rebels beheaded the headmaster of another co-ed school in the region. The Taliban maintains that educating girls is against Islam and also opposes government-funded schools for boys because they teach subjects besides religion. And, you know, I'm reading this and I'm thinking, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is the similarities between fundamentalism across the world. Okay, so you have the fundamental Taliban who are against teaching girls in Islam. And you also have the fundamental right here in this nation that, while thinly veiled, still would like to set, I believe, would like to set women back about 200 years. You know. And the vanguard of this movement is now, he's now under appointment to the Supreme Court. Welcome to the United States of America. And, you know, I mean, we all heard Osama bin Robertson this week, who was talking about how, Ariel Sharon was to blame for his stroke. Well, you know what? He may very well be to blame for his stroke. The bottom line is that he may have had too many, you know, Krispy Kreme donuts or something. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But I will say that he, you know, the fact that he was splitting the land is the fact that he was splitting the land and all that had nothing to do with the fact that he had a stroke. I mean, come on. Maybe a high-profile job. Maybe the fact that he was eating too heavily. Who knows? But definitely not that. But I want to get back to this whole Afghan school thing. And you know, there's several things here that, in my mind, that are creating this situation in Afghanistan. And I just want to touch on this for a minute before we go to the break, because I hate for us to lose sight of this. I mean, you know, the news, the mainstream media is so very, 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 very ADHD. I mean, they go from one subject to another so fast that they forget stuff, including the fact that we just had, we had Katrina back in August. You know, what do you hear about Katrina? There are still people who are missing. There's still, I think I heard, we talked about this last week, 1,300 kids missing still. You know, and where's the news in on this? The news is in somewhere else. They're trying to tie the Democrats to Jack Abramoff right now. That's where the news is right now, and we'll get to that shortly. But that's what they're doing. You know, they're not talking about the fact that we left Afghanistan. Well, you know, we still have some military there, but certainly not enough to create any sort of vestige of security. And you know. I'm sure there are people out there who have answers about this. I really don't have an answer about this besides to say that it's a damned shame that there are schools, dozens, that have been burned since we ousted the Taliban. Okay? I mean, the future of that country is in the education of their children, as it is here. And if they have nowhere to teach them, You know, that's crazy. I mean, it is just truly crazy. We have created more instability than we have created stability. It's about 13 minutes after the hour. We've been on the air since about top of the hour. My name is Bruce Birch. You can, if you'd like to, you can call tonight's a call in. We're going to do a call in show tonight, and I'm sure that somebody will dial in at some point. But if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can by calling 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. One of the things that we want to try to do tonight before we do too much is, get into some other news stories. And when that happens, which will be after the break, by the way, which we're getting ready to take, by the way. We'll get there. Thanks for dialing in and listening to us tonight. All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. You can reach us online at allthingsreconsidered.org.
Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Nice to see Bush starting off the new year the way he ended the old one, lying about the NSA spying program. "I was elected to protect the American people from harm," he said. Actually, he was elected to uphold the Constitution and to see that the laws are faithfully executed. But that's fine print to Bush, who continued, "And on September 11, 2001, our nation was attacked. So obviously, he didn't do a good job of protecting the American people from harm." Back to Bush. "And after that day, I vowed to use all the resources at my disposal within the law to protect the American people." It's that little clause within the law that's at issue here. And we all should have claustrophobia when Bush invokes that clause, because he thinks that just because he authorizes something, that makes it within the law. Here, Bush echoes Nixon, who said, "When the president does it, that means that it is not illegal." Bush couldn't even explain the NSA program properly without hedging the truth about it, saying several times that the eavesdropping was limited to calls from outside the U.S. to calls within the U.S. Afterward, his aides had to come to his rescue and say that he misspoke, that the NSA, in fact, is also eavesdropping on calls coming from the United States. This guy's clueless. He's clueless about his own spying program, and he's clueless about our Constitution. I'm Matt Rothschild.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night at onradio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. Head on radio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard, and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
All right, welcome back to All Things Reconsidered. I kind of got started a little strangely there, because I got taken off topic. I was talking with someone prior to the show, and what, you know, sort of how I arranged things to happen just didn't happen the way I got lost. I just got lost. That's the bottom line. Grateful to have you back here with us. Glad that you have dialed your listening device into All Things Reconsidered. Today we're going to just be doing taking some telephone calls. If you feel so inclined to call in, you know, please do so. 336-856-2855. 336-856-2855. And you know, the other thing that's going on now, I talked a little bit before the break about the whole deal in Afghanistan with the Taliban attacking schools that are teaching women, you know, and how in this nation the front might be a little bit more progressive, you know, in that, you know, the religious right isn't burning down schools, but they are, you know, trying every means at their disposal to, again, to harm women's rights with regard to their health care. And, you know, we have people like Rick Santorum in Pennsylvania, Samuel Alito, who is the hard right nomination of the Supreme Court. You know, we have people like George Bush in office, you know, who merely listen to the hard right and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do. Well, you know, I'm ashamed at times by my fellow Americans, because they truly don't believe in the same freedom and democracy that I do. But let's move on, you know, from that to some other things. And I'm sure, you know, there's a lot, all this stuff is tied together. I mean, the bottom line is that all these people are in cahoots with each other. But the next story is about this Abramoff character, you know, this Jack Abramoff guy. You know, he has been, and my friend Rama, who does a show directly prior to mine, and you can get there if you're interested in some more live radio on Sunday, that's independent radio. You can go to Rama Bahama, ramabahama.net /homebodies. And if you go to that website, you can see the link to he and his wife do a radio show. And it's spot on. It's good stuff. Good radio. But apparently, the FBI is viewing this Jack Abramoff guy as a middle guy. You know, they went after him, took him down, took 18 months of investigation and negotiation for him to finally make a deal and plead guilty. But they are seeing him not as like the end-all be-all of that investigation. What they're seeing him as is a middle guy, suggesting that there are bigger targets in their sights. Now, if you want to read more about this, you can go to Raw Story, and it's plastered all across the top of their homepage there. But apparently the FBI has 13 field offices across the country working on the case, with 24 agents assigned to it full-time, and roughly the same number working at part-time. They are continuing to try to chase down every lead. Okay? So, they're also saying, let me just read this quote to you. Well, I'm totally missing at this point. Anyway, point being is that they're not stopping. They have gotten a negotiated deal from him, but they're not stopping. And apparently, you know, I would say get a hold of finding out where those 13 field offices across the country are, and I bet you that you'll find who they've got targeted for the, you know, to you know the GOP members of Congress that they're targeting. But the crazy thing is that the media, now here's the backstory. The media is working hard to try to, you know, tie, now I don't know whether this is because of their need to be fair and balanced. Oh, I hate that saying. Because, you know, what is truly fair and balanced, right? Or if it's some sort of need to be, to try to be lapdogs again to the Bush administration, you know, and I'm going to lean more toward the latter. But I mean, even today, and I'm going to pull up this little sound clip for you. Even today, our friend Wolf Blitzer, you know, came up and decided what he wanted to do was throw the Democrats into the same trash heap as the Republicans with this whole Jack Abramoff thing, you know. So this is a little clip from this morning. It's not a very long clip, very short clip. A little clip from this morning. Wolf Blitzer interviewing and talking to Howard Dean, the Democratic National Committee chairman, about the issue.
The Democrats who took money from Jack Abramoff, who's now pleaded guilty to bribery charges, among other charges, a Republican lobbyist in Washington, should the Democrats who took money from him give that money to charity or give it back?
There are no Democrats who took money from Jack Abramoff. Not one. Not one single Democrat. Every person named in this scandal is a Republican. Every person under investigation is a Republican. Every person indicted is a Republican. This is a Republican finance scandal. There is no evidence that Jack Abramoff ever gave any Democrat any money. And we've looked through all those FEC reports to make sure that's true.
But through various...
Well, there's another clip there that I'm going to play here in just a moment. So there's Howard Dean going on record and saying that no... I mean, you know, I got to tell you something. First of all, for a Democratic National Committee chairperson to stand up there on national TV and to make a statement that clear to me has got to be the truth. Okay? Now, we've heard over the past few weeks, we've heard any number of talk show hosts on the left side who have asserted this, who have done the research. And now we've got the DNC chairman, Howard Dean, coming out and saying it. What more do we need to do to get the mainstream media to drop the rock? I mean, for God's sake, let it go. So what I'm thinking is that what we've got here is a problem with the larger corporate media. Again, you know, they can't help themselves. They have to be in the middle of it and trying to create a news story instead of just reporting it as it happens. Facts. Wolf Blitzer, not to be undone, decided that what he wanted to do was to further try to insinuate wrongdoing by the Democrats. And who knows if he got his point across, but here's the second clip.
But through various Abramoff-related organizations and outfits, a bunch of Democrats did take money that presumably originated with Jack Abramoff.
That's not true either. There's no evidence for that either. There's no evidence.
Senator, what about Senator Byron Dorgan?
Senator Byron Dorgan and some others took money from Indian tribes. They're not agents of Jack Abramoff. There's no evidence that I've seen that Jack Abramoff directed any contributions to Democrats. I know the Republican National Committee would like to get the Democrats involved in this. They're scared. They should be scared. They haven't told the truth. They have misled the American people. And now it appears they're stealing from Indian tribes. The Democrats are not involved in this.
Well said, Mr. Dean. Well said, Governor Dean. So what we have Governor Howard Dean saying is the truth. Now, what I would like to challenge everyone who's listening to this show to do is if you call into any talk shows this week, you know, if you call into any shows out there where there are we have the opportunity to talk about this, is to get on those shows and tell the truth, especially. Any show, especially any progressive show, where they're still asserting that Democrats took money, because it's just, you know, it's a lie. Okay, it's a bald faced, it's a lie. And time will tell on that. I mean, you know, time will tell with the news, with the media, whether or not they will actually focus on that and realize it and, you know, tell the truth about it or not. But I think it's embarrassing to watch Wolf Blitzer have his ass handed to him on national television, you know, which is what happened there. he made him so flustered, he's like, so anyway. Next story we're going to talk about after the break is about the fact that the White House invited a number of people recently, this past week, to visit, who were former Secretaries of State and Defense. And these folks showed up and, were there for a little bit of a briefing, a little bit of a town hall meeting, if you will. But we'll get to that right after this break. This is Bruce Burt. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. And if you'd like to dial into the show and have a part of this program, what you can do is you can call us at 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. Or you can send us an email, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org.
Child, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. There is illegality high and low among Republicans in Washington. At the highest level, of course, there are the myriad impeachable offenses that George W. Bush has committed, from lying the nation into war to violating the treaties and the statutes that prohibit torture to spying on Americans without a warrant. Then there are the low crimes and misdemeanors that are now filling the dockets. The conviction of Representative Duke Cunningham on bribery charges. The conviction of Michael Scanlon, one of Tom DeLay's former top aides, on bribery charges. And now the conviction of Jack Abramoff, the Wheeler dealer extraordinaire. Abramoff, as well as Scanlon, may help bring DeLay down, and what a delightful fall from grace that'd be. DeLay received more than $70,000 in contributions from Abramoff and associates or clients, along with several junkets, most notoriously to the Mariana Islands, where DeLay met and then covered for sweatshop operators who were Abramoff's clients. Also in trouble is Republican Representative Bob Ney of Ohio, who is referred to as Representative Number One in the Abramoff plea. Sometimes it's not great to be number one. He's squirming today. Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert also collected $70,000 from Abramoff. Now all of a sudden he feels the need to return the dough, as does Senator Conrad Burns, Republican of Montana, who received $150,000 from the Abramoff pipelines and only last month returned them. Burns, by the way, chairs a Senate subcommittee dealing with Indian affairs, and we all know Abramoff had several of them. There's also George Bush here. In his 2004 reelection campaign, he received $100,000 from Abramoff and associates. When is Bush going to return that tainted cash? This is quite a tangled web here. When the accumulation of power and money is the only motivation, this is what you get. Scandal, Republican style. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
You're listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered.
It's time to connect the Downing Street dots. British memos confirm two things about our ongoing war in Iraq. One, the president staged a media campaign to overstate Saddam's WMD threat. Two, there was little or no planning for a post-war occupation. Connect the Downing Street dots, and you have a war of choice where the president chose not to have a plan.
For more information, visit BuzzFlash.com.
You're listening to Bruce Birch back on All Things Reconsidered. Glad to be back with you after that little short break there. Those are my kids, by the way, who gave that little interesting little, you know, you're listening to my dad thing. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll be in radio at some point, too. But the story that, before I went to the break, the story that I had pulled up that I wanted to talk about was the fact that George Bush invited former secretaries of state and defense to the White House the other day, just to, you know, sit around and talk and, you know, chew the fat and talk about, you know, how well things are going in Iraq. And this is out of the New York Times. I'm just going to read this to you, you know, a couple of paragraphs, just because I just thought it was really quite interesting. That is that Colin Powell said nothing, a silence that spoke volumes to many in the White House on Thursday morning. His predecessor, Madeleine K. Albright, a bit stirred up after hearing an exceedingly upbeat 40-minute briefing to 13 former secretaries of state and defense about how well things are going in Iraq, asked President Bush whether, with the war taking up all the energy of his foreign policy team, he had let the nuclear programs in Iran and North Korea spin out of control and allowed Latin America and China policy suffer by neglect. "I cannot let this comment stand," Mr. Bush shot back, telling Ms. Albright and the rare assembly of her colleagues who reached back to the Kennedy White House that his administration can do more than one thing at a time. The Bush administration, he insisted, had the best relations of any country with Japan, China, and Korea, and had active programs to make alliances around the world. Apparently, this was one of very few heated moments during this entire bipartisan meeting. And it was actually a very brief one because Mr. Bush allowed only 5 to 10 minutes for interchange with the groups for an exchange. And then he left and left them to talk to Steve Hadley, Peter Pace, and who, you know, and, you know, lower level staffers who were sitting around waiting for the meeting to be over with. So, you know, there you go. There's that little, I just had to share that little snippet of a story with you because I just really thought it, I thought it was completely ridiculous. I mean, you know, why bother? And really the reality is that it was a why bother moment. All he did was bring them in to do a photo op, and that was pretty much it. He didn't really want to know what they had to say about anything. You know, the reality is it's primarily, I believe, because the government right now is in the throes. They're in the last. You know, Dick Cheney talks about being in the insurgency being in the last throes. I, for one, think that this Republican administration is in its last throes. What we're seeing is an unraveling. The unraveling began when Cindy Sheehan went public and said, "President Bush, I want to ask you a question. What is the reason, what is the noble cause that my son died for?" And he never entertained her, you know? And this movement built, and things started spinning out of control. That was the tipping point. In my mind, that was the tipping point. And, you know, recently, as recently as yesterday, we have things like this. This is the text of Tom DeLay's letter to fellow House Republicans regarding his decision to refrain from returning to his majority leader post. In other words, it's his resignation letter. "Dear colleague, today I have asked Speaker Hastert to convene our conference for the purpose of electing a new majority leader, the position I have been honored to fill these past 3 years through the trust and confidence of our colleagues," and arm-twisting and back-breaking. "During my time in Congress, I have always acted in an ethical manner within the rules of our body and the laws of our land. I am fully confident time will bear this out." What, how much time? 5 to 10? "However, we live in serious times, and the United States House of Representatives must be focused on the job of protecting our nation and meeting the daily challenges facing the American people. History has proven that when House Republicans are united and focused, success follows." You know, hopefully that, you know, hopefully they're united and focused against the GOP at this point, but we'll see. "While we wage the important battles, I cannot allow our adversaries to divide and distract our attention. I will continue to stand up for the issues I care so deeply about and work with you all on those priorities. I am constantly thankful for the support of my constituents in recent days, as well as over the years they have allowed me to serve them. I will continue to work every day to fulfill their trust and yours. Regards, Tom Bone Crusher DeLay." Tom DeLay, resigning from the House of Representatives, Majority Leader post. Now, he's not resigning as the representative from Sugar Land, Texas. He's just resigning from the post that he held with an iron grip, and basically that he used as a way to arm twist everyone into the way that he wanted them to vote. Now, looking to the future, it appears that either Roy Blunt, who is really who now Blunt, who is out of Missouri, show me, who is out of Missouri, has been serving as the acting majority leader since September, and I believe he is the DeLay's choice. If DeLay had a choice, this would be the guy that he would put in place. Now, he is going to be asking his colleagues to make his post permanent, but apparently John, I guess you say it, Boehner, B-O-E-H-N-E-R, Boehner, John Boehner of Ohio, Mike Pence of Indiana, and Jerry Lewis of California. Now, I'm not sure if that's the same Jerry Lewis that we're thinking, like the, you know, anyway, Jerry Lewis of California will be challenging Blunt for that position. Which makes for a really interesting time, because to me, I'm thinking, you know, if they spent the next 3 months fighting over the House Majority Leader position, they're, you know, they're not going to be fighting about how to steal more money from us, right? Right. Like that's going to happen. They have staffers to plan how they're going to steal money from us, I believe. If you'd like to get in on the telephone on the show tonight, you can call us at 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. You can also send an email, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. One of the questions that was up tonight was a show length, was changing the show length to, you know, 2 hours. Someone asked me if I'd be willing to do it. Now, I got to tell you, my friend Peter Werby comes up after the show in about 18 minutes or so. So it's going to take a lot of arm twisting to get me to go to a two-hour program. But we'll, you know, time will tell. Time will tell. The one of the next stories that I wanted to deal with, and this is actually, you know, over the weekend, if you heard the show All Things, or I'm sorry, if you heard the show Fourth Estate Radio, we had my co-host and I, John Fox and I, had a gentleman on that program named Bob Kincaid, and Bob has his own radio show also. It was a real radio showy kind of night. Bob has his own radio show also, and you can get to that show by going to headonradio.com. Amazing show. I listen to it most every night that I can, that I'm not, you know, out saving the world or something like that. And we talked about the whole thing that happened in West Virginia this week. And, you know, I'm going to share a few words about it tonight, too. Mainly because, you know, the frustration that I heard in Bob's voice really, really struck me. Now, you can listen to that conversation we had with Bob. It's in the second hour of Fourth Estate, starting about 7 minutes after the middle of the program. But, you know, the folks in West... Now, you know, all the TVs, all the CNN and the MSNBC and the whatever else, Fox News, you know, were focused on West Virginia for this whole coal mining thing and you know, this tragedy. Not an accident, by any stretch of the imagination. A tragedy, okay? And when we talked with Bob, some of the things that we found out about mining were really incredible to me. Not the least of which is the fact that, you know, just they've lost 15,000 people there to mining. You know, in the last, I think, you know, I'm not even going to try to remember the time frame, but it was a relatively short time frame. And this is something that West Virginians live with on a daily basis. You know, many, many, many of the West Virginians that have a job at all are, you know, going to the mines. And of the mines that are non-union mines, of which this was one, when they do that, they're basically taking their lives in their own hands so that we can have electricity to do our radio programs with, to dry our clothes, to light our Christmas lights outside to, you know, and I'm laughing just because I still saw Christmas lights up today, you know, shining out through some of these neighborhoods. And people who are lighting, you know, who are using this electricity don't think that there's a connection between the miners who died in this mine tragedy and them turning a light switch on, when in actuality, there is a direct line. It's not even a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 twice removed kind of thing. There is a direct line, and there is a direct cause-effect relationship. Okay? So, you know, I'm going to share this statement, then we'll get on with the story, excuse me, that I have. And that is that, you know, and I've heard Bob say it, when you turn off the lights, it's possible you're saving someone's life. Think about that one for a minute. You know, because what happens is, every time we use up more coal, well, you know, somebody's got to go get it out of the ground. And those people who get it out of the ground are the ones who get killed in these tragedies. Before I, you know, I'm going to leave you with that to go to the break, and then I'll be back in just a couple minutes. But we're going to get right back into this subject right after the top of this break. And you're listening to All Things Reconsidered. If you'd like to get in on the program, you got about 14 minutes to do it. Telephone number is 336-856-2855, 336-856-2855. You can send us an email at allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. And you can also go to our website. There is an email subscription form that you can fill out and sign up for show updates. There's also a listener map that you can go and put your name in and say, hey, I'm a listener of All Things Reconsidered. We'll be right back.
The editor of the Progressive Magazine with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Leave it to Pat Robertson to ascertain God's will yet again, this time in regards to the stroke that befell Ariel Sharon. The televangelist detected the hand of God Almighty, saying that Sharon had crossed the Creator's wishes by giving Gaza back to the Palestinians. He was dividing God's land, Robertson said on his 700 Club TV show, adding, I would say woe unto any Prime Minister of Israel who takes a similar course to appease the EU, the United Nations, or the United States of America. Most people chalked up this latest Robertson rant as just another indication that the guy's not all there, and while I'm certainly prepared to believe that, there's more to this story. Like Robertson, many right-wing fundamentalists were outraged in 2004 when the Bush administration urged Sharon to leave Gaza. Ever concerned with his base, Bush had neocon ex-felon Elliot Abrams meet with him. Abrams was Bush's National Security Council director for the region. According to the Village Voice, Abrams was hearing out their theological concerns, and they said that all of Old Testament Israel belongs to the Jews, and until Israel is intact, Christ won't come back to earth. Abrams, who himself will have to convert or die if the apocalypse arrives anytime soon, tried to persuade them that Gaza had no significant biblical importance. This is the company that the White House keeps. It's not Pat Robertson I worry about. It's Bush. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
'21 was the year. Seems like yesterday to me. Let me tell you about what happened then. Back in the mine country, we were fighting hard to build a union, 'cause at 40 cents a ton, there was no way to feed a family when the mining day was done. The strike had lasted for a year.
All right, you're back on with Bruce Birch and All Things Reconsidered. And before we went off coming back in from the break, that was David Rovics, and you can actually go to David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com, and that's the Battle of Blair Mountain. That song was called the Battle of Blair Mountain, and really interesting artist there. So if you're interested in that, please do go check that out. Also, now, I do have a caller on the line, and we're going to go ahead and pick that up real quick. We have Spike from Easton, PA. Spike, how you doing?
Hey, Gonzo greetings.
Gonzo greetings, my friend. How are things going on up there?
It's nice. It's warming up here.
Fantastic.
Not too bad.
It's warming up now. Is that as a result of global warming, or is that just a freakish thing that's sort of happening? Or
it's a more common freakish thing that's probably happening because of global warming, I'm figuring. A little bit of all of the above.
Okay. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm noticing at least Reuters, I think AP too, a lot of talk against about nuclear stuff around the world. You know, we're hearing now Iran is now going to be taking the UN seals off their reactors and defying the UN order, and North Korea is claiming, as quote in the Reuters headline, is illogical. It's talking like the robot from Lost in Space now, apparently, quote in this headline. I mean, I just find it funny that it seems every time something just kind of hits the floor and hurts the GOP party, we hear all these talks again about something nuclear, some sort of a nuclear threat. You know, and we even get that too, you know, when they want to do something down in the Beltway, you know, the nuclear option. And just, somebody's got to, I hate to make this lowbrow, they kind of got a hard on for nuclear fear in people these days.
I think they got it in for, we saw, okay, and Keith Olbermann laid it out perfectly back right after the election, that every time there was a drop in the polls for the GOP, the first thing that happened was they put out some sort of terror threat, and then all of a sudden the poll numbers go up. Did you see that as well?
I didn't see it on Olbermann, but I mean, if you just watch the news enough, every time something bad happens, there's always some sort of, you know, something to take the attention off of them with that. And these nuclear things, I mean, these things go on forever, and it just seems interesting that we always seem to have an issue with it right at a bad moment. This way, you know, don't pay attention to this or that. You know, because we had 12 Americans go down in a Black Hawk today in Iraq. You know, of course, that's not going to be a big story that one day one helicopter crash, 12 guys die over it.
Right.
You know, but we'll hear about these threats of the secret menace we can't see or smell or hear that may kill us all at any moment. It always seemed to strike right around the time the Republicans just got one in the crotch. You know, I just find it very, very, very convenient at times that certain information leaks at certain times.
Well, I agree. I totally agree with you. And I think that there, you know, I certainly hope that someone is out there, and, you know, it's not going to be me, but I certainly hope that someone is out there, like, writing this down and watching and looking for the patterns. And, you know, I would not put it past the CIA. I mean, you know, the U.S. military has already been caught planting stories, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, Armstrong Williams, you know, just the tip of the iceberg with all that.
You know, so it wouldn't be surprising to find out that the CIA planted stories in Reuters and AB and the AP to say, you know, that Iran is doing this or that. And you know what? And I don't doubt that Iran is doing it. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
But on the same token, you know, it's a, you know, is that something to be truly scared about? I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that question because I don't know that there's enough information, true information out there to make a realistic decision. I mean, you know, we've heard the rhetoric. What we haven't heard is the truth about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also hard to keep telling all these other nations, as renegade as they might be, not to do it when there's a lot of other ones already in line with nuclear weapons, and that's not really helping the matter either.
Right.
Yeah, and even regardless of the quote Cold War is over, they still kind of the hold off, almost like the Wild West. You know, two guys took a shot and missed, now they're just going to sit there and wait to shoot at the other one again. I mean, that's the kind of stalemate we've gotten on this whole issue with the nuclear arm, and then many weapons for that matter. I mean, certainly the landmines is another one. I don't understand why governments are still making landmines if they haven't been a big enough headache. You know, they still continue that debacle.
Well, you know, and I'm thinking that actually with weapons in general, you know, that we, okay, the world's largest exporters of guns and arms are also happen to be the five permanent Security Council members at the UN. Okay?
Right.
I mean, so, yeah, so, I mean, if you think about that, I mean, it's almost like it's a conflict of interest for these five countries to even be thinking about security at all, because we're the ones who cause all the instability.
Yeah. More or less.
So, you know, or controlled instability, I should say. At least that's it certainly seems to be what the how it looks like. Well, if we you know, that's what they want to say is, you know, we'll fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here, blah blah blah, lie after lie. Anyway,
yeah I mean, and that lie of all is getting us in a lot of trouble over there, because it's the number one propaganda piece, that line that he used.
Yeah,
I mean, when you speak and don't think.
Well, when you don't think and you can barely speak.
Yeah, well, I mean, no matter how you put it, I don't know who must be writing these speeches for him, but he doesn't read them.
No, he doesn't.
You just shouldn't be saying certain stuff when you're doing certain things. I mean, they're so quick to point out the other side, but, I mean, they probably are the worst habitual offenders of it. The odds of teenagers even know who John Arthur is to think what he said is bad for recruitment is such a silly point.
Yeah, well,
saying something like, we're going to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here, not always a good point when you're trying to win the population of that country over at the time.
Nah. No, it isn't. It really isn't, is it? You're right.
I mean, as disagreeable and horrific of foreign policy as we got with a diplomat dealing with the world like Kissinger, at least he might have tried to be slightly diplomatic while he was evilly trying to conquer the world.
Right. Well, and
guys are just
he's apparently
mouth.
Kissinger is apparently wanted in a number of countries for war crimes, but
yeah. But at least he sweet talks people. These guys, they can't even do that. They just talk like drunken back alley thugs at times.
Yeah, they do. And there's so much to talk about with that. But Spike, we're gonna have to leave it there because we're getting up to the top of the hour. It's great to have you on the show tonight.
Hey, no problem. Great to be listening.
All right, man. Have a great week.
All right, you too.
Okay. Talk to you later. And that was my friend Spike from Easton, PA. We are at 2 minutes until the top of the hour. And I didn't get to that story, but just suffice it to say that the International Coal Group never did request the transfer of the permit, and the EPA, the state EPA, never got in to the mine to inspect it. The tragedy was completely avoidable. We are at the top. Let's see, what time is it? We're about 1 minute before the top of the hour. This has been All Things Reconsidered. Boom on the music, huh? This has been Bruce Birch for All Things Reconsidered. We meet here every week at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard, 7 o'clock if you're living on the left coast. For radio for the intelligent and compassionate, if you'd like to join us in the conversation, you can do so by going to our website, allthingsreconsidered.org. And on that website, there is a discussion forum, and you can add yourself to the email list and to our listener map, and, you know, do go there. Do get involved. You know, and if you're doing nothing else this week, go out and try to make a difference in the world around you. This has been Bruce Birch for All Things Re.